from CAP Radio in Sacramento. This is Insight, and welcome to our listeners at North State Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. We are hearing about life changes now in terms of months instead of weeks. Early in the afternoon yesterday, Sacramento leaders announced a stay-at-home directive. Our conversations that happened live on air started with Sacramento Supervisor Phil Cerna, who said this.
I think once we saw what happened in the Bay Area region with the counties collectively issuing the order that they did. And given our juxtaposition geographically to the Bay Area, I think there's, it shouldn't be too much of a surprise to folks that this was coming. And so it took some time to think through this and to think again kind of sequentially of how we're going to deploy this directive with the hope that it really sinks in for the public to help us flatten the curve. I think everyone's becoming accustomed to that term now in terms of the virus transmission.
Supervisor Cerna referring to the Bay Area, where there is actually a shelter-in-place order for seven counties. We spoke then to Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg about the stay-at-home order for this city.
The order is clear. Do not socialize in small or large groups. And that means stay at home, except for those everyday necessities of life that you have to engage in.
So not 2 hours later, Governor Gavin Newsom held a press conference, and he expressed a no-gathering advisory for the entire state. He gave a broad update of a number of topics, but perhaps the headline that came out of that press conference was him saying few, if any, schools in California would open again for months before summer break. Later, he was asked by a reporter in the question and answer period to clarify his comment, and we're going to share this because he answered the question with a story.
Last night I got home, forgive this very personal point, very long day, appropriately and understandably, got home. There were some screams in one of the bedroom, and my wife, who was doing her best, said, "This is all yours." And one of my daughters was expressing deep stress and anxiety that she wasn't in school. Of course, never heard those words from her. I was encouraged by that. She missed her friends and she couldn't go to bed. And she had thrown her, little bunny rabbit on the floor and pillows, most of the rest of the bed on the floor. And I was with her in a very sober moment over a course of about an hour. And I told her, "Honey, I don't think the schools are going to open again." And if I can tell my daughter that and not tell your daughter that or the people in it, then I'm not being honest and true to the people of the state of California. Boy, I hope I'm wrong, but I believe that to be the case based upon work we all have to do.
So, of course, that raises many, many more questions, all of which will be answered and attended to in time. But that does give a completely different picture for really the rest of this year in terms of what happens into summer break, then into summer, and what this will mean for the school year starting again in the fall. The governor also made a couple points, which included the fact that the state needs more swabs. If you were listening to President Trump's press conference, he just invoked a national act which will free up medical supplies, and the swabs issue is being dealt with. Also, from the governor, a need for telehealth expansion to include California's Medicaid patients as well. So there is much more coverage of this at capradio.org. In the midst of this news yesterday afternoon and on the air, I talked with the Sacramento County Health Services Director, Dr. Peter Bielenson. You're going to hear me clarifying some points because this was all happening in fast motion, live on the air. And keep in mind that word months, which is our new reality. So I asked Dr. Bielenson first about the updated county directives.
It's a fairly wide-ranging directive. The two most important parts is it's directing those age 65 and older and those with chronic health conditions to stay at home when at all possible. They can go on walks or go to the park to walk a dog, et cetera, provided they are at least 6 feet from others. And also for less vulnerable populations, those at lower risk should also stay home to the maximum extent possible, except when going to essential sites like grocery stores or pharmacies.
So that essentially echoes what the governor had already suggested and ordered by an executive order. Our understanding from both the Sacramento mayor and county supervisor Phil Cerna is that this is an expansive stay at home to anybody to stay at home right now and do not go out unless it's essential.
That's exactly what we're saying. Again, 65 and older should stay home, especially those with chronic health conditions. They can go on walks to the park, for example, but that's what we're talking about. And then the less vulnerable populations also should stay at home as much as possible, except when going out to essential sites like grocery stores, pharmacies, and healthcare facilities. So that's an advance to what we've been pursuing before.
Dr. Bielenson, just bear with me here, because I think the difference is in whether everybody is being told to stay home as opposed to just those in those high-risk groups. I'm not in one of those groups. Am I under a stay-at-home directive, an order right now?
Yes, not an order, not a legal order, but under a directive, yes. If you're in the less vulnerable populations, which are those under 65 or those without underlying conditions, we want them to stay at home as well, except when going to essential sites, which is the same thing that was promulgated in the orders that were put out by the Bay Area counties.
And the difference between here and the Bay Area is that we do not have an enforcement aspect to this at this time, correct?
That's correct. We're issuing this as a directive with strongly urging folks to abide by it, and we'll continue to look at other options as the situation develops.
We had thought in the earlier conversation that this was being extended for 3 weeks, but what do you think the timetable is? How long is this in place?
It's until further notice, and that will probably be months.
Probably be months.
But it depends on the epidemic.
Will you give me the update in terms of what tests are showing and how you think the virus is moving right now? And is that what specifically precipitated this?
That's part of what precipitated this. We have 40 cases to date. I think it'll be 45 by the end of the day. But we're testing, you know, we don't have adequate number of tests. So these are just the number of people that have been tested positive. There's a significantly larger number of people who have tested who would be positive for this virus if we had enough tests.
So on the federal level, we're hearing about testing increasing. The last time you and I checked in, which was a couple days ago, the county was able to test 25 to 30 people per day. Where is the testing level in the county now?
It's a small amount above that, but the vast majority of the tests going forward, because those are prioritized, those in the county health department are prioritized to seniors with significant symptoms, and healthcare workers who have been exposed to a positive test. That's who we prioritize those tests at the health department to be for. Going forward, the vast majority of people who will be tested through national laboratory companies like LabCorp and Quest. And they've just started coming into the state. They still are sending them to other parts of the state or other parts of the country when they get the swabs in their possession. So it's still a limited number of tests, unfortunately.
At the top of the list on this latest directive in the facts about COVID-19, your office wrote, a significant majority of those infected have no or only mild symptoms. What's it looking like to the people who begin to have this? And I know we're repeating ourselves again, but I think it's really important. What is the beginning of this looking like?
You mean the beginning of symptomatically?
Yes.
So symptomatically, 81% of people around the country and around the world have a mild or asymptomatic, no symptoms at all with this infection. So for many, it's actually no symptoms, although we'll get back to that in a second. For those who have mild or moderate symptoms, they are basically low-grade fever, cough, and shortness of breath are the three kind of cardinal signs of this. That being said, one of the really important points and one of the reasons that we're trying to have the less vulnerable populations, i.e. those under 65 or those without chronic underlying conditions, to stay home is so that they don't spread the virus accidentally, because a goodly number of people who have the virus can be for 14 days shedding that virus, i.e. be contagious, and never have any symptoms. So we're trying to prevent them from infecting older people and those at significant risk.
Okay, this is tough. When you say 81% have mild or no symptoms, then how are you even figuring that out if they're typically not being tested? And then how are you keeping them from infecting others?
Very good question on both parts. First of all, my guess is there'll be significantly more people testing positive as we get more tests going on that are asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic, so that 81% will probably go higher. Secondly, in terms of trying to keep people from spreading it, that's exactly why we have this directive, is to urge people to stay at home, whether they're seniors with underlying health conditions or millennials without underlying health conditions, for opposite reasons. The millennials from communicating the disease to seniors, and seniors from getting it from someone in their neighborhood.
One more question, and I asked the same of Sacramento's mayor. We have a lot of government workers here at all levels, and often state workers are going to work or telecommuting. They are not on this list of essential sites or workers. What about government workers right now?
So I think that's probably best left to the public, the personnel departments of those entities. We certainly encourage people to telecommute or teleconference. And unless in an essential activity, they should probably stay at home, particularly seniors and those with underlying health conditions. But we leave it up to personnel services.
All right. I have about 15 more seconds. Anything else to be sure to say to everybody right now, Dr. Bielenson?
No, just that we urge people to follow these directives. And again, we're issuing this with the hope that people will abide by it, but we'll continue to look at other options as the situation develops.
Oh, and I'm being asked by our newsroom to please reiterate the timeline on this. Say again what this is and how long it's in place.
These are directives from the Sacramento County Public Health Department, and they're in place until further notice.
All right, that was Sacramento County Health Services Director Dr. Peter Bielenson in a conversation with me yesterday afternoon. We are going to check in right now with San Joaquin County's Director of Public Health. She is Zeanna Blackwell Rodriguez, and she's joining us by phone. Glad to have you with us on Insight.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I'd like to hear the update from San Joaquin County, and like many other counties, your positive case count for COVID-19 right now seems to be changing, sometimes updated in the same day.
That is correct, sometimes minute by minute. We are doing our best to keep our website updated with current information, but as you are well aware, it changes very rapidly. As of this moment in time, we do have 14 confirmed cases in our county and 2 deaths.
You've had 2 deaths now.
That is correct.
So that's a new number. Can you tell me some circumstances surrounding the patients who have died and also what transmission you know about the positive cases that you're watching?
So we do know that we do have community transmission. And that the 2 deaths that have occurred in our county were in the high-risk population of the 65 and older age range that had other chronic health issues.
If you were listening to the president's press conference this morning, you, like everybody else, would have heard Dr. Deborah Birx say, our numbers are going to dramatically increase as the backlog of tests are processed over the next couple days. What's your sense of what the broader picture in San Joaquin County is right now?
I do believe that due to the fact that many of the people in San Joaquin County are commuters, and that what we see in surrounding counties is higher numbers than what we currently have. Also coupled with the fact that now commercial laboratories are testing, the more tests that you run, the more likely you will have positive. So I anticipate that our numbers will continue to grow here in San Joaquin County.
Give me a picture of the availability of test kits, how many people the county had been able to test, and how that's been moving.
So I do want to take a moment to clarify that when we speak of test kits, we're actually referring to the laboratories that are running the tests. And I think that the general public often is under the impression that that means the specimen collection that would occur at their provider. Now, we do have noticed that there are a shortage of the swabs that are being performed in the doctor's offices to collect the specimen, as is there is only a certain number of test kits that the laboratories are using to run those tests. Currently, in the San Joaquin County Public Health Lab, we are able to run 60 tests per day, and our lab is open 7 days a week. We only have enough test kits at this point in time to last a few days, but our request for more has been approved. We just have not received them as of this morning yet.
You are able to test more people through your county lab in San Joaquin County than I've been told Sacramento County has been able to test.
So part of that is that we have increased our lab staff by calling back some part-time staff that have retired and expanding our hours. So we are able to do the two runs a day, which results in 60 tests. But I would also like to clarify that we need to prioritize what we do in our public health lab to support our healthcare infrastructure overall. So our priority is for patients that are hospitalized and especially those that are in ICU beds so that we can make sure that we're turning over beds in the hospital as appropriate to make sure that our overall infrastructure is able to support the needs of our communities.
So what do you want people to do who feel sick and have symptoms that they suspect could be COVID-19?
So first and foremost, stay home. If you have symptoms that do not warrant medical care, if they're just normal cold and flu symptoms, stay home. Stay home as much as possible. If you have to go out, do your social distancing and only go to critical needs such as picking up medication or food, and if possible, send someone else to do that. Wash your hands frequently, disinfect any surfaces that you're touching to prevent the spread of disease, and as always, cover your cough.
I'm talking with Zeanna Blackwell Rodriguez. She is the Director of Public Health in San Joaquin County. To what extent are you able to talk about schools? I know the 14 school districts in the county are closed, and there was an anticipated reopening of April 6th, which now seems, based on what the governor is saying, I guess, unrealistic.
So we are available to consult with the school districts and continue to monitor our situation. Ultimately, we would like to support their decision in closing schools, but have not moved to a point that we would offer an actual order to close the schools. But definitely I'm in constant communication with not only schools, but healthcare facilities and employers and any of the homeless shelters and any entities that would require guidance or have high-risk populations.
I'm so happy to be able to have this conversation with you. And just to somewhat reiterate what you've said, give me your sense of the alert that San Joaquin County is in and on right now based on the population there and what you're seeing in this 14 positive cases, 2 deaths in the county, and where the testing is going.
So as previously stated, we anticipate that the testing will continue to increase in volume as other laboratories are able to provide those services. And so we will see an increase in our numbers. I would also like to say to the general public that this does not warrant panic, that we need to remain calm and reasonable and follow the guidance that is put forth by public health.
Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time on Insight.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That is San Joaquin County's Director of Public Health, Zeanna Blackwell Rodriguez. The mayor of Stockton is on the phone with us, Mayor Michael Tubbs. He's been listening to this. And Mayor Tubbs, I'll just open it up to you to say what you'd like to say following that conversation.
Well, first and foremost, I know for a lot of people, there's a lot of anxiety. People are upset. People are scared. People are paranoid. As we've been saying in Stockton, that this moment is a moment not to panic, but to prepare. To prepare not only to make sure you have toilet paper and food and things of that sort, which aren't in danger of being gone, that there's enough food and toilet paper for everyone, but also prepare to just make sacrifices. It's going to hurt all of us. We're all going to end up staying home more than we're used to. We're going to end up not being able to move as freely out and about in social spaces, but it's to protect our most vulnerable. And I think particularly in a community like Stockton, where there's lots of people with chronic conditions, it's important for folks to stay at home unless they're doing things that are essential. If they're doing essential job services or if they're getting groceries or prescriptions. And I think it's also an opportunity for us to prepare to be kinder than ever before, more empathetic, more giving, and to prepare to be good neighbors as we navigate through this public health crisis together.
The county has declared an emergency. Do you have or are you putting in place any kind of a stay-at-home order right now in terms of the city?
Well, from my understanding, the public health official, the county public health official, will have to make that directive. And as soon as that directive is made, we stand ready to comply. And I think given the fact that we went from 13 to 14 already in two deaths, given the fact that as we test more and more cases will be found, and given the fact that we have, again, a lot of people in our community who aren't just 65 and older, but also who may be younger but have chronic health conditions, I think we have to have a directive from our county public health officials around a stay-at-home directive. In the interim, what we did last night as a city is we essentially have done that in telling our businesses, our restaurants, our bars, our gyms, they can't operate. And the restaurants can do takeout and delivery only. And again, these are hard decisions, but I think public health and the well-being of our community has to come first. So we've been telling folks that it's important to stay at home, unless for essential functions. I've also been talking with folks from our state legislature to our governor's office to Vice President Biden's team and others, our senator, about the need for some sort of cash stimulus to people. Because if people are going to be at home and not working, or if businesses aren't going to be able to operate, then folks are going to need some cash to get to navigate through this coronavirus. But essentially, in the city of Stockton, we're telling folks, stay at home unless it's essential. Check in on your neighbors, and we implore our friends in the private sector and others to kind of make that decision and understand that this is unprecedented. This is not a normal time, so we can't use normal ways of thinking, and we're going to be uncomfortable. But again, with already two deaths and 14 cases, just last night when we met, it was 13 cases, and I wasn't aware there were any deaths, signals to me that this is very serious, and we have a small window of time to get ahead of the curve so we can flatten the curve.
In fact, we're going to see if we can put this conversation together on the air. We are trying to reconnect with your director of public health, Mayor Tubbs, to see if we can explore where the county is at right now on this kind of a stay-at-home order. Meanwhile, you did an emergency meeting as sort of a telephone town hall. Tell me how that worked and if that's something that you're going to continue to do.
Yeah, so Monday, in response to, again, some of the angst and panic in the community, we had a teletown hall with myself, the public health officer, the superintendent of our largest school district, Stockton Unified, and our city manager. And we had upwards of 1,000-plus people on the line to hear just kind of updates at that time in terms of what was happening and what we were doing as a city to prepare for the coronavirus. So we were able to give out information. Give out facts. We're also able to take questions, and we look forward to doing that regularly over the next couple of weeks to make sure that people are getting accurate and up-to-date information. And then on Tuesday, we had an emergency council meeting just to ratify some of the things that we can do as a city to ensure that public health is the top priority, that we're protecting Stockton residents, especially those who are 65 and older, especially those with chronic health conditions, but also all of us. So we made very tough decisions last night, and we understand this is the beginning of a new day, of an unprecedented public health crisis, and when we have to respond accordingly, in that it's better to be overly cautious. It's better to be too careful than to act like things aren't different, to act like things aren't normal, to act like people won't be harmed and then to do nothing. So I'll continue to push and get us to the place where we're doing everything we possibly can to ensure that the residents of the city of Stockton are safe.
Mayor Tubbs, I'm not talking, obviously, with someone from the County Board of Supervisors, but there was a decision that county employees, to some extent, will continue to work through this time of coronavirus concerns. Can you address that at all and the concerns that might have for county employees?
Yeah, I've heard a lot from county employees, and as you mentioned, as mayor, I don't oversee or none of those folks report to me, but a lot of them do live in the city of Stockton. So I would say I think the city last week made a decision to do kind of remote work for our employees, except essential employees, and have folks working from home or not having any public-facing offices, closing our libraries, closing our community centers. And that's not just the best practice in Stockton. That's the best practice in government entities throughout the state. So I would implore my friends at the county to do the same.
All right, Mayor Tubbs, thank you so much. If we are able to reach your public health director, we'll get her back on the air here and we'll try to work through that question. Meantime, I appreciate checking in with you and all the ways that you're reaching out to the citizens of Stockton, and we'll consider this an ongoing conversation, okay?
And can I say one more thing?
Sure.
Because I think oftentimes, like, again, especially for our small businesses that are impacted, so what we've done as a city, we've also allocated $1 million last night to create a coronavirus emergency fund. And then I'm also starting a private fund with philanthropic dollars this week to sort of match that. So we have a little bit of money to help kind of ease into the transition of the time we're going into. So we're, again, it's not fun for anyone. It's not enjoyable for anyone. It's the times we live in, but together we'll get through it.
How can small business owners access that?
So by next Tuesday, we'll have clear guidelines and criteria from once the council votes in terms of how to access those funds.
All right. We will follow up. Thank you so much for your time, Mayor Tubbs.
Thank you.
That is Stockton's Mayor, Michael Tubbs. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to focus some attention on grocery stores, on the supply chain, on panic shopping, and the hiring that's happening at grocery stores, too. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio, and welcome to our audience with North State Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. We do have San Joaquin County's Director of Public Health back on the line with us, Zeanna Blackwell Rodriguez. Ms. Blackwell Rodriguez, thanks. I'm sorry we had to call you back, but I appreciate you joining us again. Could I explore with you where your office is in terms of a specific stay-at-home or sheltering directive for San Joaquin County?
Sure, absolutely. So we have not officially, as a county, issued a formal order per se, but all of our messaging is, please stay home, do social distancing if you must go out, and only go out for critical needs such as groceries, medication, and access to health care.
Do you feel that there's a statewide message on this that the county falls under?
I think that all of the guidance that is coming from the state is intentionally somewhat loose to give the communities and the counties the flexibility to do what is right for the current state in their particular area.
The mayor just said, now with two deaths in the county and the numbers rising, that perhaps this is something that should be considered. What are you looking at in terms of criteria for when to take that next step?
So I think that first and foremost that as a public health entity, we need to stay based in science and not submit to or succumb to politics or panic. And so we are in constant communication with all of the leadership in the county and the cities, trying to determine what is best during our current situation. It is not a public health per se situation, I would say, that every city also has the ability to act on their own. But we are looking constantly at the situation and communicating as needed. I also like to point out that when you're looking at a county versus a city, a lot of the services that are essential for county are not often offered by the city. So we really have to balance in how to assure that the public still gets the services, the essential services that they need, and still maintain safety.
When you say staying in the science, does that focus right now on the number of cases? And that would include not only people testing positive, but the number of deaths? And that in the event there is this spike because of any backlog in processing, that a stay-at-home order is a tool you have in your tool belt right now?
That is absolutely correct. It is something that we actually have prepared in the event that we are in agreement with the county overall to move forward with that. That is a directive that has been discussed, and like I said, we are prepared to do. We are looking at the science in that we look at how the community transmission has occurred thus far. And so a lot of the majority of the cases in our community, while we do have community transmission, has been related to travel and is also the high-risk population, as I mentioned before, of greater than 65 with other health conditions.
Okay. Again, I appreciate that clarification. I think it's important for everybody who's trying to understand this in detail. And again, San Joaquin County today with 14 positive COVID-19 cases and 2 deaths being reported. Thank you again, Zeanna Blackwell Rodriguez. I'm so glad that you could join us.
Thank you.
So we are going to shift gears right now because grocery stores in some places are beginning to designate senior shopping time. You might want to ask your store if this is available. And keeping the store shelves stocked is important. You heard Stockton's mayor saying, there is enough food, there is enough toilet paper. So I'm happy that on the phone right now we have the president of the California Grocers Association, Ronald Fong. And Mr. Fong, thanks for making time to talk with us on Insight.
Good morning, Beth. Thank you for having me.
Would you describe the number of grocers you represent in California, and what's your sense of how many stores are open right now?
Our membership includes approximately 250 grocery stores, large chains, medium chains, and small independents as well. So we represent a good majority of the retail grocery stores in California.
What would you say the COVID-19 impact has been? And it's quite become a cultural phenomenon to see the rush of shoppers. Would you give me the picture from your view?
Yes, obviously the COVID-19 crisis has changed the shopping patterns, to say the least, of many of our customers. There seems to be an unnecessary mind frame from some of our customers to overbuy or to stock up. In fact, it's almost like a bunker mentality that you may need to buy as much food as humanly possible and to bunker down for as long as we are trying to live under the shelter-in-place initiatives that are going around the state.
So what do you think people should be doing right now? How should they be shopping?
They should be shopping a normal pattern. If your pattern is to buy for your family for a week or a little bit of a week, I would stick with that pattern. There is really no need to buy for 3 months and to have toilet toilet paper for the next 3 months, because what you're really doing by those shopping patterns and extending that time frame is that you are not leaving enough products and supplies for other people that need it. In particular, the governor has addressed the vulnerable customers that we have and those that are 65 and older. I think it's really important that customer base is vulnerable. They're not able to get to the store as quickly and as often as other customers, and we need to have product to be able to deliver to them.
I know some stores are now limiting the amounts of certain items. How widely practiced is that listing right now?
That is widely practiced, and it is a direct result of people hoarding or overbuying. In the beginning, we had people walking out with cartfuls of toilet paper, in fact, stocking up, as I described earlier, for 3 months at a time. Totally unnecessary, and that is the main reason why our retailers are now having to limit some of the more popular items.
But people went into stores and saw empty spaces where there should have been toilet paper or paper towels or hand sanitizers. It looked like a shortage.
Yeah, that's the direct result of overbuying. So I will say that overall, the supply chain is intact. We have plenty of product, toilet paper, general merchandise, food. The supply chain is plentiful and safe. However, we cannot keep up with this shopping pattern of customers. The delivery process is obviously compromised at this time. Your average grocery store gets a load of groceries every night. They usually stock it overnight, and it's ready to go for the next day. With the overbuying situations, our stores are facing two or three loads per day, and it is impossible to keep up with that delivery mechanism from manufacturer to warehouse, from warehouse to grocery stores.
Okay, so does that mean that there are a lot of jobs open at grocery stores across the state, and food service workers or rideshare drivers who may be out of work would be able to temporarily find a job at a store?
The answer to that is yes, and thank you for reminding me to address the grocery store employees. They are our crown jewels right now because they have been willing to work double shifts, overtime, many days in a row to react to this new buying situation. To run a grocery store, there are a lot of bodies that are needed to make that happen, and our employees and grocery stores are doing the best that they can. However, we do have limits. We have, labor restrictions that stop employees from working too many days in a row. They need their appropriate rest and time. Therein lies an opening for more jobs to come around. If you go to any of your grocery store websites, you will see a plethora of open jobs. Some jobs are so available that people are hiring on the spot or within the week. And I would just encourage folks to go to the website of their favorite grocery store and look at the many jobs available. I was talking to my very good friend and colleague, Jot Condi, at the Restaurant Association.
We spoke to him yesterday, yes.
Yes, and there is a shift and an availability as restaurants close for in-house dining. There is a shift in job opening over to the grocery side if that is something that appeals to folks.
Okay, one more question, and you have been gracious with your time today, Mr. Fong. Produce. We had a listener tip about picking produce by putting your hand in a plastic bag and grabbing your produce, and then it's already bagged, and that's really a bit of brilliance in terms of shoppers. But there's a lot of concern about produce being out and whether it needs to be washed after we buy it. Can you give me the hints from the grocer's perspective?
I think that's a brilliant solution, just to sort of use the plastic bags that are provided for you in your produce department and use that in essence as a mini glove and reverse the bag that is used afterwards. I would just appeal to our customers to use their common sense and to use these bags definitely wash your produce when you get home like you normally will do. And I think practicing daily commonsensical hygiene is the way to go.
All right, you're in demand. I hear the phone ringing, so go ahead and get it. Thanks
that.
For talking with us. That's
all right,
okay.
Beth. Thank you for having me.
That's the president of the California Grocers Association, Ronald Fong. We're going to skip up the mountain to Tahoe City. Alex Hunt is on the phone right now, and Alex is the co-owner of Mountain Slice Cafe and Creamery. Hi, Alex. How is it in Tahoe City today?
It's actually snowing, Beth. It's nice.
It's kind of heartbreaking for everybody like me who loves winter and loves the ski season up there, and all this snow just fell, but the resorts are closed. How are you doing with your pizza, cafe, and coffee business?
You know, that seems to be the irony right now, where we have all this snow falling, and then, like you just said, with the resorts closing, you know, because we are a tourist-driven town here in Tahoe City, a lot of our tourism and people driven here into town is through the resorts. And with that closing coupled with COVID-19, you know, a lot of the businesses here are definitely feeling the effects, and we're all trying to figure out the next steps as to how we can kind of make our restaurants still viable in this time.
How much of a buffer do you have? You're a small business in a small resort town. Have you targeted it on the calendar yet?
Well, I'd like to emphasize small business to the max here. We're an 850 square foot restaurant here with very limited seating. You know, most of our traffic is by foot here on the streets, and a lot of it is word of mouth to the tourists that are here in town by locals. And because we don't have any of that, it's, you know, it is hard. And so we've right now, our town specifically is kind of limited as far as the delivery services goes. And so this is kind of a good time for a lot of the businesses here to explore that delivery option. And so with us being a pizza place and delivery being typically the mode of transportation for the pizza, for us, we don't do delivery. We're a takeout and eat-in facility only. But now with the limitation on having people come into the restaurant, eating here in the restaurant specifically, we're really trying to ramp up that side of things. And with that said, we're trying to stay viable with that. And, you know, we could probably go for another, you know, month or two if things don't pick up, if the delivery doesn't take off. And hopefully, you know, with that said, it will. We're trying to really just help the community out with trying to mitigate the spread of the virus by still being able to provide a service and a good product to people. And that's really the catch-22 that we're having right now as a business.
Yeah, because the human mission almost supersedes in, by every angle, the business mission at this point, right?
Yes, ma'am. I mean, you wanna provide a service, especially to, you know, the elderly population that we do have up here that may be nervous to going out and getting food for themselves. We want to be able to, if they need, go and provide, you know, food for them in that regard. But it's also, at the same time, you want to make sure that you're not exposing yourself. And with us being a new business, you know, we've only been around for 3 years. And with that said, we've had employees that have been with us for 2 out of those 3 years. And we want to make sure that we take care of them, and they're being able to bring some sort of paycheck in for themselves and being able to support themselves while the season is slow and while we're not bringing in the typical business that we would be bringing in.
Okay, Alex, let's finish this by having you describe more specifically, where is Mountain Slice Cafe and Creamery in Tahoe City?
So Mountain Slice Cafe and Creamery in Tahoe City, we are right next to the lake here on Lakeside, right in the heart of downtown Tahoe City. We share a building with Tahoe City Sushi. You can see us. We've got a big ice cream cone on our balcony right there with a little shop under the stairs. You can find us. We'll come on in. We'll take care of you guys. We are doing only takeout and pickup only, and we are starting to do delivery today. So give us a call, and we'll make sure that we take care of it, whoever
does. Okay. Good luck. Hang in there. I hope you can get through it all, Alex. So great to hear from you.
Thank you so much, Beth. I appreciate the time. Everybody stay safe.
All right, you too. That is Alex Hunt from Tahoe City. We're going to take a quick break. Stavante Clark is on the phone, and we'll talk with him next. This is Insight on CAP Radio.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Insight on CAP Radio, and welcome to the North State Public Radio audience. I'm Beth Ruriak. It was 2 years ago today, March 18th, that Stephon Clark was killed by police after a chase through the South Sacramento neighborhood of Meadowview. His brother, Stavante, is on the phone with us. And Stavante, thanks so much for making time. Glad to talk to you.
No problem. Anytime. Pleasure to talk to you as well.
How is your family marking this day?
Well, we usually, every year, we usually do something called a Legacy Weekend. Since we're not able to do that, we'll be doing a call of action for a small group of press at the state capitol today at around noon to 2 p.m.
Okay, I saw that was scheduled, so that will still go on today then for people who want to join with the family and remember that will happen at the Capitol today?
Yeah, well, we're calling for justice still. The officer that murdered my brother, Jared Robinet, and Terrence Murthedall, we believe they need to be fired immediately from SAC PD and charged to the fullest extent of the law in an open court of jury by a jury of their peers, because every day, not a day go by, we don't think about my brother, Stephon Clark. And additionally, we're calling on local organizations and interest groups to support a recall of District Attorney Anne-Marie Schubert for a failure to bring charges against officers Robinet and Murthedall.
2 years is a time period that can feel like an eternity, or it can feel short. And Stavante, you became such a public figure in all of this time. What has this two-year time period meant for you and how you've processed what happened?
Well, for me, it's been healing. You know, I've been working, trying to preserve my brother's legacy when it comes to like this Legacy Weekend. You know, the second annual, and the corona thing kind of screwed us up a little bit. You know, this is the annual thing we do for our community. The Stephon, AB 392, Stephon Clark Law, you know, which clarifies that police can use deadly force when there are no alternatives. Like things like this, and the body camera policies, the foot pursuit policies, and the new mural we have, it made the healing a lot easier when I see his name being respected in a positive light. So, you know, it's been a lot. You know, we're still traumatized over the death of my brother in my grandmother's backyard. But the positive things we've been able to do under his name has been very healing.
I've heard a number of different plans over the past months and even the last 2 years about ways that you wanted to make permanent markers, permanent memorials for your brother. What's in process now? What are you looking forward to?
Well, we just did a playground, Stephon Clark Playground, that was by the Fortune School. You know, we just partnered with the city last year to do our first annual, well, this year will be our second annual Harambe Festival. We'll be doing a second annual block party. The next thing for me when it comes to preserving my brother's legacy is a resource center, a library, something that can live generations after you and I have left this earth.
Can I ask you, and if this is too personal, just let me know, but can I ask you how Stephon's children are doing?
They're children still. So, you know, they're doing the best with the situation that they're in, like the rest of us. They're hurt still. You know, they want their father and their daddy, of course, and you know, it's hard. So, you know, we're healing. You know, we're just healing, and we're asking that everyone keep us in their prayers. That's all we're asking.
I appreciate that we've been able to have this conversation and have continued to over the months. I think there's been a lot of understanding and learning on everybody's part through this. Could I make it personal to you? What have you come to learn and understand about yourself through all of this, Stavante?
You know, I've learned personally that, and this is just me, I'm not speaking on anybody else, this is my experience of what I've been through since my brother died. And what I've learned in this is that most people, they either have a price or they have an agenda. And if they don't have either of those things, then most of the time, I'm talking to the wrong person, and I'm not dealing with the person I need to be dealing with. Because a lot of this stuff is, it's already, the system is flawed. We all know it. But I'd rather be a person with solutions instead of just talking and bashing the problem, if you know what I mean. I'm a solution person. I want to find out how we could fix the problem together. My motto is everybody love everybody. I have no hate in my heart. And however I could spread that message of love in a positive light and attach my brother's name to it, I'm all in for it. But, you know, all I've noticed is that people and their prices and their agendas sometimes aren't as upfront as we would like them to be. But that's okay because, you know, we're all human and we all make mistakes.
Well, our goal today was to make time to connect with you and your family, if we could, on this program. And I appreciate that we've been able to do that. And I will say again that the family will gather at the Capitol at 2 o'clock today. So thank you very much, Stavonte Clark.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
And that's Insight for today. Of course, there's much more news, and you can find much more history about the Stephon Clark shooting and all that's transpired in the last 2 years, as well as the ongoing response and battle with the coronavirus. It's all at capradio.org. We continue to monitor breaking news for you throughout the day. We'll bring it to you as it unfolds. I'm Beth Ruiak for all of us here at Cap Radio and on the Insight team. And again, that welcome to North State Public Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.